If you're 60 years old today, there's a good chance you'll live to 100. Are you prepared? Welcome to Your Longest Life, the podcast all about exploring how we can live our best life as we age. Here's your host, Ian Thompson.
Good morning. This is Ian Thompson, the host of Your Longest Life. And I am super excited today to have our guest, Jeanette Liardi. Good morning, Jeanette. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Ian. Great to be here.
Excellent. I'm just going to read about who you are and what you're about here. It says you're proudly age 68. Is that right?
No, I'm proudly age 69 now.
Uh-oh. Thank you.
I got to change that. I got to change that on my website, I guess.
You're proudly 69. You're Portland-based social gerontologist, writer, editor, and community educator who's a passion for older adult empowerment. You give popular presentations, workshops, and journaling, spiritual writing, memoir writing, personal myth-making, ethical will creation, brain fitness, holy man, ageism, intergenerational communication, and more. Now, just before we get started here, I there was something else that you had on your website. It says, if you're alive, you're aging. It's as simple as that.
That's right. It is as simple as that.
And that seems to be a great topic here. It says, unfortunately, many of us view aging as a scary or repulsive process. That's understandable, considering we're bombarded with cultural messages telling us to grow old means to deteriorate and decline. Well, I don't want to read that anymore because I'm 63. Jeanette, I don't want to deteriorate and decline.
Well, I mean, who does really, you know, at any age, who wants to consider that that's a possibility, you know? So I mean, there are some inevitabilities about getting older. You start to lose some of your physical abilities. I need to wear eyeglasses now. My hearing isn't that great. But there's a lot of great stuff about aging that people don't know about. And that's what really gets me going. I need to be telling people the good stuff about getting older. Because if we can appreciate that good stuff, we won't look at getting older as a time of dread. You know, I don't want kids to dread getting older. I want them to anticipate and say, hey, grandma, grandpa, I can't wait to have a brain like yours, you know. And there are good stuff, good things about our brain that change as we get older.
So with the aging population of people living longer and longer, this topic is more and more relevant.
That's right. That's right. The world is getting older. I mean, they're going to be right now. We have more people above the age of 65 than there are below the age of 5. There's in the first time in human history. When did we ever have more old people than kids on the planet? Mm-hmm. Never, except until around now, because we've made such great strides in medicine that people are living longer and they're living longer with chronic illness and all of that. But we've got amazing medicines that are keeping people alive. And so there are going to be more of us on the planet, and people need to appreciate that fact. And there's a lot of good things about having a lot of us older people on the planet.
That makes me feel better.
You're good.
Now, what about, is this, when I hear the term ageism, I automatically go to the workplace. Is it just, is that the first and foremost place that you see? Or
it's everywhere. It's everywhere. You know, people, those of us in the aging services field, I don't care what you're talking about. If you're talking about healthcare or housing or transportation or civil rights or anything, ageism is at the base of everything. If we don't talk about ageism, all our other solutions are Band-Aid solutions, in my opinion. If we can start changing our minds about aging, then we can really solidly deal with workplace discrimination and healthcare discrimination. I mean, there's a lot of in medicine, a lot of older adults aren't even considered part of medical trials. So when they're starting new medicines, creating new medicines, a lot of older adults aren't even included in clinical studies. So we don't know what the appropriate dose is going to be for an older person. Just like years ago, most heart studies were done on men. And so everyone was surprised that women experience heart disease differently because we were never included in the studies. So fortunately, with COVID, with these vaccines, older people were involved in the clinical trials to begin mm-hmm. with, which was a real benefit. But other times we haven't. So it exists in healthcare. It exists certainly in the workplace. And actually, that's usually where white men experience ageism for the first time is in the workplace. We women have the double whammy of being older and being women at the same time. And so we have other kinds of expectations put upon us, such mm-hmm. as your hair shouldn't turn gray, you shouldn't have any wrinkles. But yes, there is a lot of ageism in the workplace for men and women. Yeah.
And is it something, I mean, I guess it's hard to do anything without talking about COVID. We talked about that before we started, but with COVID and people leaving the work, maybe retiring early, do you think all that is, not all of that, some of that has changed in the mindset of people with COVID that maybe, hey, I should be not retiring, I've got nothing to do, or I should. Yeah. Have you noticed any of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the case. And actually, we in the States, we have a labor shortage now. There are, you know, companies are hiring again. I wish companies would think about hiring older adults. There are many of us older adults who can't afford to retire, who still need to work, who still want to work. And we still want to be productive in the ways that we can be productive. The problem we run into with ageism in the workplace is that people demand of us to produce in the exact same way that middle-aged people produce. And there, again, there are certain capabilities that we develop mentally as we get older. We lose some mental capacity, but we gain others. And that's where the workplace needs to appreciate what the older brain can do. So I'll give you an example of that. As we get older, we have two hemispheres, a left and right hemisphere in our brain. They don't actually touch. They're only connected by a bridge of tissue called the corpus callosum. Now, we're born with that little bridge. It's very thin. But as we get older, that bridge thickens and thickens until it matures when we're in our 50s. It doesn't get to its prime maximum condition until we're in our 50s. And what that means is that as we get older, we can tend to use our left and right hemispheres simultaneously more often and better. So what does that mean in the workplace? Well, older adults problem solve differently than younger brains do. The young brains are conditioned to come up with very fast ideas, the black and white, you know, this is easy, we should do this, we should do that. The older brains, the power of using both hemispheres simultaneously better is we're the ones who can say, oh, that's a good idea, but what if, you know, you may have to be careful of this situation happening, or we tried that 20 years ago and we needed to do it this way. So you need both kinds of brains in the workplace and on work teams. You need intergenerational work teams. You need young brains and you need older brains working together. And they are the most productive. So I wish businesses would understand that when they retain older adults in the workplace, they wind up making their businesses more productive. They expand. And when businesses expand, what do? They have to hire more people. So, you know, this fallacy of the lump of labor where you hear people, younger people say, why don't you hurry up and retire and give us room so that we can take over, you know, we can have your jobs. And the point is, you don't want that to happen. You want older brains there so that the company expands, and then that will hire more younger people. So, you know, these are the kinds of things that there's ageism. That's, you know, it's ageism.
And so the good news would be that because of COVID and the lack of people, maybe businesses are just going to be forced.
Yeah. And regardless. Yeah. And hopefully they'll learn that older adults can adapt to change. You know, there are all of these stereotypes that, you know, older people don't like to change. We're stuck in our ways. Well, I tell people when I give classes on ageism, I say to people, what was a telephone like when you were a kid? What's a telephone like now? If you could handle a dial phone and now you handle a smartphone, you have changed. So older people, we've had decades more practice in changing. We have to change all the time. We have to change. We have to adapt to our bodies changing. We have to adapt to the fact that we are losing friends of our own age. They are dying out. So we are dealing with all kinds of change. So we're the master changers. You want to ask people what it's like to change, ask an older person, because we can tell you stories of all the iterations of the cars we went through and the washing machines we went through. And so we know about change.
So we know about change, and that's a strength, not a weakness.
It's absolutely a strength. We know about being flexible and being resilient. We've had decades of practice doing that. Now, there are some old people who don't like to change, but there are also some kids who don't like to change. There's some teenagers who don't like to change. There's some middle-aged people who don't like to change. So not changing isn't the specialty of older adults. We can all be vulnerable to that.
As we all live longer and longer, what about our outlook on life as an individual? Do you have any thoughts on how do we maintain that sort of positive mindset that might help us address when this comes up?
That's a good question. Another benefit of the older adult brain is as we get older, we tend to have more positive views about life, actually, because we've had decades of experience, all the experiences that we've had, so that when something negative happens to us, we can tend to, we have a history now of surviving all other kinds of negative experiences. So we're able to put that in better perspective, like, oh, okay, I survived the depression, or I survived this, I survived that, I will survive this as well. And interestingly enough, very recently, a study came out done by Laura Carstensen, geriatric researcher, who said that actually older adults are dealing with COVID better. We are more susceptible to COVID, and there are many more deaths among older people. But in terms of our attitude toward COVID, we have been dealing with it better than younger people have. And that's something called the U-curve of happiness. Have you ever heard of the U-curve of happiness? Oh, there you are. Okay. People tend to be happiest at the beginnings and the ends of their lives. So when we're younger, we have a more positive view of life, and everything is new. And yeah. I mean, and I'm grossly generalizing, because yes, there are children who have very hard, difficult lives. Yeah. We all have. But in general, kids, are just kind of, everything's new. Everything, they can't wait to get older. How many times have you heard a 5-year-old say, "I'm 5 3/4"? I'm not five. Or teenagers can't wait till they get their first apartment, or can't wait till they leave home, So they're happy. And same thing with older adults. Our brain changes so that we can regulate our emotions better. We don't see the difficult things as badly as we would when we were in middle age. So we have this slump around like our late 40s, middle to late 40s, we become the least happy in general. And then it starts to get better and better. So, as I said, I'm 69. My friends, I talked with my friends and lots of other people I've heard say, I would never want to be back in my 20s. I would never want to be 30 again. I would, now, to be honest, I'd like to have the body I had when I was 30 years old. But all that aside, I wouldn't want to have the brain I had when I was 30 years old. I can think much more sophisticatedly now. I have a greater appreciation of time. That's another thing that happens as we get older. We appreciate time better because we know we have fewer years ahead of us than behind us. And mm-hmm. so we really do try to live in the moment more. Whereas when we're younger, obviously we're all living in the future. What will I do 10 years from now, or all of that. So we're basically happier. It gets better. So I'd like to tell anybody who's in their 40s listening to this, it does get better. Hang in there. And teenagers too. Especially tell teenagers, hang in there. It does get better.
Yeah. Well, I'm in the real estate space, of course, and we were talking about, being happier, living longer. And we have developments that are 55 plus, seniors oriented versus multi-generational living together. What are your thoughts on those?
I can understand why older adults many times would prefer to live among people of their own age, that can understand them better. And in a way, sometimes I think it's a response to the decades of negative messages we constantly get about being old. We are constantly put down, we're marginalized. And so a lot of times people decide, all right, let me just live with people who are my age, who understand me, and I don't have to, deal with this other stuff. But what we're also finding now is that intergenerational involvement for a lot of older people is very important. In our society, where people are very mobile, so that a lot of times many kids are living far away from their grandparents. They hardly ever see their grandparents. So they don't have access to an older adult. So, and older adults who don't have grandkids or whose grandkids are far away, they miss being with kids. Mm-hmm. So it's a mixed bag. Communities that are 55 plus meet the needs of certain people, but I wouldn't only want to have those type of communities. We have things now, associations now called villages. I don't know if the village movement is in Canada. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that can be a real boon to those of us who are in our later years to have younger people involved with us. So it takes a village, just as it takes a village to raise a child, it takes a village to support an older adult as well.
Very good observation, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that, back to the real estate, because the prices are higher and higher and higher and higher, we're seeing more families having to pool resources.
Yeah.
To allow to own a home.
Right.
And so grandma and grandpa are on the ground floor suite, and the kids are upstairs because their knees work. They're doing the stairs more. That sort of thing. That has to be positive.
Yeah, you know, in a way, we're actually going back in history, because for the most, for the majority of human life, people were lived in intergenerational communities. You had old and young, literally living in the same hut or the same house or the same whatever, or at least in the same town. So it really has became an aberration more since the Industrial Revolution, because during the Industrial Revolution, younger people started leaving the farmlands to come into the cities to get work in the cities. That's when this kind of ghettoizing of age really started, was from the 1850s on. Now we're finding, because of economic reasons, that we're going back in time, which can actually be a really good thing for all generations. You know, here's an interesting thing. I'm a gerontologist, and there are young people who are going to gerontology school. They're studying, okay, you know, in college and everything. And I'm always fascinated by young people who do this, people in their 20s who want to work with older people or want to study aging. And I ask them, why are you fascinated by this? Because I was in my 50s when I changed careers to go into gerontology. Okay. But they're in their 20s. And yeah, so what is it? And invariably, without exception, they say to me, I had a great relationship with my grandparent. Or a next door neighbor, an elderly person was really kind to me, or an uncle was really, I really had a good relationship. So they had the experience of having a positive role model in their lives at an early age. Did you know that ageism can be ingrained into a child as early as 3 years old?
Kids. Yeah, talk more about that. That's...
They can start to have views because they absorb especially if they don't have contact with an older adult, a positive contact, they start to absorb their parents' views. And their parents might be saying things or might be... They get these vibes from their parents, who themselves may be ageist. And so these kids absorb these lessons as well. Some schools in the United States, I don't know if they do this in Canada, but this is starting to hopefully ebb and not do this anymore. Okay. A lot of schools, on the 100th day of school, they have this activity called Dress as a 100-Year-Old Day, where kids go to school dressed as the wigs and the wrinkles and the walkers and everything. Yeah. And those of us who are anti-ageism advocates are saying, stop this. Will you please stop this? Because that's not to say that no old people use walkers. Of course, there are, you know, many old people use walkers and many of us have gray hair. But that should not be the main reason, the main association kids should have with age. So what some of the schools have done was to do something like save 100 pennies every day during school, put a penny in the jar. And at the end of the 100th day, this is how much 100 pennies look like. So they're giving a more positive, cumulative slant to aging, that as we get older, we are accumulating the interest, if you will, of having experiences and knowledge and hopefully wisdom, you know, applying that knowledge in wise ways, so that we need to be changing kids' minds about aging, because if we don't deal with ageism now, our kids, our grandkids, our great-grandkids, they're going to have to deal with it too. All the ads for anti-aging, you know, creams and Botox, and I understand that in Silicon Valley, young men at the age of 30 are getting hair transplants and Botox and 30. So, you know, it's getting worse. It's not getting better. So that's why we need to be stopping this as soon as possible. And intergenerational activities can help when you have older adults who may have more time, more free time to go into schools and be like reading buddies to kids, and give them that positive relationship at an early age.
You use the term ageist.
Yeah.
What's the right way to say this? How does a person know if that's what I am?
We are all ageist. I'm going to say that right at the beginning. Nobody I know has been able to escape the ongoing onslaught of messages. I have been ageist. I have said ageist things to myself, to other people. Here's an example that I've said to myself many times. I'm too old for this. Okay?
Okay.
Now, when I say I'm too old for this, then I had to ask myself, am I saying, is it really age that makes me say that? Or do I mean something else by old? So a lot of times, I would get disgusted at something and I would say, I don't want to be bothered. I'm too old for this. Well, maybe it's I'm too wise for this. Maybe I'm too enlightened for this. I'm too impatient for this. So there are times when we can say these ageist things, but then we have to really catch ourselves and say, well, what do I really mean by that? And is age really stopping me? What's stopping me from doing, from dressing in a way that other people would consider a younger person should dress, or doing something that a younger person would do? What if I want to go dance in a nightclub at 2 a.m? But would I stop myself saying, well, I'll be the only old person there?
Yes.
So what if I'm the only old person there? Yeah, they can make fun of me, but you know what? Maybe they'll look at me and they'll remember at time as they get older. Oh, you know, I can go dancing in a nightclub at 2 a.m. if I want to. So all of us start out as ageist. And just like, I mean, ageism is another, it's discrimination based on age, just like racism is a discrimination yeah. based on race, or sexism, or homophobia, all of those isms. The ironic thing about ageism is that it's the only one we are all vulnerable to. I'm not vulnerable to racism in many ways, or men are not vulnerable to sexism in many ways, but we're all vulnerable to ageism. Right. If we're all aging, it's going to happen.
Yeah, so you're, it keeps going up. If you're alive, you're aging. It doesn't matter.
Exactly. So we might as well start dealing with it now and be positive role models. You know, I tell people, I always make it a point when I give a presentation to say my age, because we need to declare our age, not just admit our age. Okay. And I find that a lot more women now are declaring their age, which is a good thing, because it was always this bugaboo, never ask a woman her age. Why not? Why not? You know, we're asking where. Yeah, right. Why should it be a secret? So it's that kind of thing.
I wrote down self-esteem. Mm. I just want to talk about that for a minute, because typically I think of self-esteem as a younger somebody in high school, perhaps doesn't have the self-esteem to go out and do what they want to do. They're embarrassed about what other people will say.
Right.
And I just heard you talk about, okay, let's skip forward 70 years and it comes up again.
Right.
Like, I don't want to go out and dance or do whatever the things right. you mentioned, because I don't have the self-esteem that I'll be embarrassed. It's funny how that just never.
Well, but here's the thing, that doesn't happen as often as you get older. Another quality many of us older adults develop is we don't care what people think of us anymore. Right. Like, not as much, at least not for me, as much as I did when I was a teenager, or peer pressure or whatever. We become, well, here's the fascinating thing about getting older. We become more different from each other the older we get. So whereas as we're younger, we have more similarities with other kids our age, even if we were raised in different ways or we were of a different race or a different ethnicity, we still have more in common with each other as we're younger. But think of it this way. As we grow, you make certain decisions. Life leads you down certain paths, and those paths lead you to other decisions and other paths. And so our paths start to diverge. And the older we get, the more different we are from one another. If you're in a room of a bunch of older adults and you have every older adult tell his or her story, you would be amazed at the variety of stories you hear. I mean, it would blow your mind, the kinds of things you would hear. So we're all different. And so we recognize that. And we're not as many of us are, really don't care anymore what, you know, what people think of us. The opposite, the downside of that is a lot of times we're also basically invisible to a lot of people in society. They don't even see us there. So if we're in a group of people having a meeting, a lot of times people won't even ask an older person, well, what do you think? We're sort of like kind of out in the margins. That's why I'm very passionate about instilling in other older adults this self-esteem to say, assert yourself. People need your wisdom. Don't be afraid to share your wisdom, because they need what you have to say. So if you're in a meeting and there aren't enough older people there, raise the question, why aren't there enough older people here? Just like you might raise the question, why aren't there enough women here, enough men here, or enough younger people? By the way, ageism goes both ways. We can be ageist toward young people, too. We think that they're not smart enough. They haven't lived long enough. Oh, you know, you're too young to understand. So we can be ageist toward young people as well. And so, you know, so it's everywhere. And we just need to be dealing with it whenever it comes up and not be shy about dealing with it. And there are ways of doing it with a sense of humor. Somebody in a store says to me, can I help you, young lady? And I'll say, do you have eye problems? You know, I'm not a young lady, and I'm okay with that. You can call me ma'am, I'm really not a young lady, and that's okay. You can feel good about it. So
well, let's transition over to one of the articles you wrote. You're an excellent writer.
Thank you.
Something about the gray panthers. Now this goes back, I don't think you wrote that was Maggie Kuhn.
Right. Maggie Kuhn was the founder of a group called the Gray Panthers. This was group was founded in the 1970s. It started out as a group that was protesting the Vietnam War, but then they developed into a group that was for civil rights, advocating for civil rights for all people. And then they, especially for older adults. And interestingly enough, it was always an intergenerational organization. So it was young and old advocating for old people together. And she felt that there were basically certain roles that older adults can play that as we get older, you know, there are certain things we can all do. So she had these five roles that she thought older adults can play. She said they could be mentors who teach the young, mediators who resolve civil, racial, and intergenerational conflict. They could be monitors of public bodies who serve as watchdogs of City Hall and Congress. They could be mobilizers of social change. And they could be motivators of society who urge people away from self-interest and toward the public good. And she said, this is what older people can do. A lot of times we have the leisure time to do this in ways that we couldn't when we were busy raising families or working to build up a career. But this is, and not only with because of our leisure time, but also because of our, again, the problem-solving abilities of older adults, the way our brains have changed. And also, as we get older, we change our life purpose. Our life purpose becomes more socially driven. What can I leave as a legacy? How can I do good for others? We tend to move, our brains tend to move in that positive direction of service, of public service. And she said, that's what older people can do. Now, I thought about this and I thought, well, yeah, but what about somebody who's got like severe dementia or bedridden or really, really incapacitated? Do they not have a role to play too? And then I thought, no, they have a role to play. They could be mirrors and models.
You had those two, didn't you?
Yeah, mirrors and models. They can be reflect back to us how we are treating an older person, and they can model for us ways in which an older person can remain dignified and as autonomous as possible. I mean, how are we treating older people, especially people with dementia? You know, are we treating them as if they're a kid, or are we, you know, respecting that there is an adult selfhood in there, that whether or not we have access to, that person has a history, has preferences, has values. So that's what, you know, I think that was the amazing thing she said is about these roles that older adults can play. And I mean, I challenge anyone to think of an older person who couldn't play one or more of those roles, you know, but it's up to our society.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But it's up to society to give us the opportunities. You know, we keep knocking on the door, and a lot of times the doors are closed to us. Or the way I put it, if you've ever heard the phrase, the silver tsunami, you know, we're going to wipe out all resources and we're taking over the planet and there's not going to be anything left for anybody. And I say, we're not a silver tsunami. We're a silver reservoir. We are a reservoir that with our values and skills pent up, if they would only open up the floodgates and let us infiltrate and irrigate society with all our knowledge and experience and compassion, there would not be this attitude of scarcity. There would be this abundance that we would actually help to grow and save the planet. And a lot of us older adults are really committed to trying to save the planet for future generations. But we need to be out there more, and society needs to let us be out there more.
Well, Jeanette, this could go on all day. I just love talking with you. Thank you. Now, listen,
thank you.
I know we have to go pretty quick here, but do you have just like a top two or three things that a typical person could start thinking about every day just to change that ageist?
Okay, so here are things they could do to challenge ageism.
Thank you. Challenge, yeah.
Yeah, to challenge ageism is to demand that society reality checks its expectations of you. If you think society doesn't expect you to do certain things, do those things if you want to do them, and be the one who challenges it. Say, well, why do you think I'm too old to go mountain climbing? Why do you think I'm too old to be dancing here next to you? Why, you know, challenge that. Also, share your story, your time, and your talents. Be out there sharing. Now, there may be times when you feel that nobody wants to hear your story, but there are a lot of young people who really do want to hear old people's stories. They really do. So be willing to share your story and your talents. There isn't a single old person that I know who knows something that a young person wouldn't also want to know. Find out who that young person is and share it. And then learn from that young person what they know that you could learn. So exchange. Be open to surprising yourself and to surprising others. Stay engaged. Try things new. Don't fall into the rut about people saying, well, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Plenty of us old dogs know lots of tricks we can share. And we also want to keep learning tricks as we go along. So those are things I would say. Be out there. Don't let people shut you away or marginalize you. Don't marginalize yourself. Don't be internally ageist. Say, no, I'm worth being out there. People need to know who I am and what I'm doing. And I've got stuff to give and I have stuff to learn. So always have a mindset of giving and learning, the give and take. And that's what can keep you vibrant as you get older.
Oh, fantastic. What a great way to end. Thank you. Our guest today has been Jeanette Liardi. And we can reach you at your website, right? JeanetteLiardi.com.
Right. JeanetteLiardi.com.
Well, thank you very much. It's been great speaking with you. And
thanks, Ian.
I hope we can do it again soon.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Your Longest Life with Ian Thompson. If you found this episode helpful, please subscribe and share it with others. For more info, articles, and to get in touch with Ian, visit yourlongestlife.com.